Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Hello, puppet. How are you today? Today, I'll tell you what I'm going to talk about. The new intolerance in America, opposing a political theocracy. I know it sounds heavy, maybe a little too heavy, but, you know, talk radio is about ideas, isn't it? Now, many of you know about the intolerant left, but something is now emerging in the wake of a Trump victory. I see intolerance on the other side. You can't say anything against decisions Trump is making without facing some type of vitriol from the true believers. There was a book written about this type of psychological behavior with that exact title, The True Believer, Thoughts on the Nature of Mass Movements by Eric Hoffer. I remember reading it in the 50s. And it describes the fanaticism of people who are consumed by one idea without taking a step back to see what's really going on and how those dynamics feed a mass movement. That's what I'm afraid we're seeing with Trump. You see, I was the only one in the conservative libertarian sphere who objected to the dangerous act of Trump publicly taking this call from Taiwan or making the call to Taiwan before he is even president. And now we learned last night who was behind it. Bob Dole. Bob Dole, the lobbyist, now says he was instrumental in making this telephone call happen. You see, he's on the payroll of Taiwan. But Edwin Fulner, former president of the Heritage Foundation, was said to have been a crucial figure in setting up the communication channels between Trump and Taipei. These are people who served Reagan and who supported George Bush's Middle East policy. Where did that get us? And they're aided by true believers who don't have any world experience, who are suggesting that any criticism of Donald Trump on any manner, in any level, is a dangerous thing to do. I can't go along with such groupthink, which says everything that Trump is doing is the right thing. I have to come out and analyze these situations in an independent manner. I believe this is a danger to our relationship with China. It is not the same as reaching out to a dictator in Cuba. You see, Castro had no power to do damage to us the way that China can. It's not the same as having reached out to Russia to say that we can talk about peace in a region is one thing. But to deliberately poke a bear that we need to have a working relationship is quite another. China owns trillions of dollars of our debt. They're manipulating currency so we can't compete with them. But we have to negotiate them as we have been and will do with Russia since Trump was elected, quietly and behind the scenes. The smart thing to do is to let China save face. We heard it yesterday from people who call the Savage Nation radio show, people who actually worked in China, people who know how it is to do business in China, people who know the Chinese culture and mindset, people who know how to get things done with Chinese people at the bargaining table. Yet Trump is doing this publicly before he's even in office, taking abrupt actions. You see, a transition is hard enough with people trying to find their footing. But to complicate things on a global level like this is irresponsible. China is on a war footing. They use all their money to build up their military. They have been conducting a cyber war with us for many years. They have hacked many of our military secrets. To purposely try to show them up at this time is the exact wrong thing to do at this time. But the whole Republican establishment is pointing Donald Trump in this direction. And anyone who speaks up against it is ridiculed, excommunicated, and called names. The force of social media is used against them. They just want us to shut up. Well, I'm not going to. It's they who have to reanalyze and step back before criticizing independent critics such as myself. The RNC Beltway bandits, the war machine, the military-industrial complex must not be allowed to dictate foreign policy. And you, the true believers, must not get swept up in a mass movement where you can see no wrong being done. The last thing we want to do is become as equally intolerant as those on the left, who we have come to despise because of their intolerance. I'm talking about the new intolerance in America opposing a political theocracy. If you care to comment, the phone number is 855-400-7282. I would appreciate an intelligent call. Name calling, you're not going to get on the air because it's not going to be of any interest to anyone listening. Name calling is fun, but it's boring. So let me continue with one more paragraph on this new intolerance opposing a political theocracy. To me, the worship of any politician is akin to a fundamentalist religious mindset. To the true believer, either you believe or you don't believe. Either you believe in God or you don't believe in God. Either you believe in a politician or you don't believe in a politician. Here is where the danger resides. Just as there are no absolutes in science, there is no absolutely pure, correct political system. We've seen what happens when a dictator insists on imposing his political views on the masses. North Korea, Cuba come to mind. To a lesser degree, we have seen this under Obama, where there is no opposition. We must remain vigilant with the man we elected to ensure that our hope for him in America does not become blind worship. I'm Michael Savage, and I agree with this monologue. Phone number is 855-400-7282. The new intolerance in America opposing a political theocracy is the topic. I want to turn now to a few other topics related to this. In one case, I will turn to Eric Hoffer's book, The True Believer, and read you a few lines. On another case, I'm going to lead this topic on a new a political theocracy right into an area I'm very interested in right now, which is the whole issue of God or faith. And I want you to leave some lines open for this, Jim. Do you think God had a hand in this election? Did your church ask you to pray for America before the election? Did you pray for Clinton did you pray for Clinton's defeat? Did you pray for Trump's victory? I want to hear from you for a number of reasons. Nobody has asked these questions in the media. Not one of the geniuses in the political sphere asked the question about the influence of religious groups and religious people in this regard. Oh, they've asked whether evangelicals voted for Trump and who got the evangelicals to vote for Trump. I know that. I'm not talking about the vote. I'm talking about the issue of God in the election. Did your church itself ask you to pray for America before the election? Did it influence you in any way? I love these questions. But now going back to my main idea, which is the new intolerance I see emerging in America opposing a political theocracy, I want to refer to a book that I read on air a couple of years ago and then read again this year. I've had it with me for years. It's a beat-up old library copy, The True Believer. And he was writing about the emerging dictatorships in America. Abraham Hoffer, who was, I believe he was a Abraham Hoffer was a longshoreman, wasn't he? I believe so. I'm not 100% sure. I think that's who he was. A common man, ordinary man, a worker, an Eddie. He wasn't highly educated, which means he had a clear mind. He was worried about fanatics who needed a Stalin to worship and die for. And he wrote this book on the true believer. And he wrote about the Machiavellian detachment that mass movements from Christianity in its infancy to Islam in the present day to the nationalist uprisings of our own day and what they portend. And in The True Believer, Thoughts on the Nature of Mass Movements, written in 1951, Hoffer talked about the fact that all mass movements such as fascism, communism, progressivism, Islamism are spread by promising a glorious future, and that to be successful, these mass movements need the adherents to be willing to sacrifice themselves and others for the future goals. And so he said, mass movements often glorify the past and devalue the present. He said that mass movements appeal to frustrated people who are dissatisfied with their current state, but are capable of a strong belief in the future. He then said mass movements appeal to people who want to escape a flawed personal self by creating an imaginary self and joining a collective whole. And he said some categories of people who may be attracted to mass movements include poor people, misfits, he said former soldiers, and people who feel thwarted in their endeavors. Hoffer quoted extensively from leaders of the Nazi and Communist parties in the early part of the 20th century to demonstrate, among other things, that they were competing for adherence from the same pool of people who were predisposed to support mass movements. And despite the two parties' fierce antagonism, again, Nazism and communism, despite the fierce antagonism of both sides, they were more likely to gain recruits from their opposing party than from moderates with no affiliation to either. Well, this book is a very important book, and I think I'm going to quote from it a little bit, because there are other leaders who were great, who did the very same things but didn't lead their people astray. That would include Gandhi, Churchill, Nehru. They also harnessed man's hungers and fears, and put together a following, and to make it into a great, great, great following. But unlike Hitler, unlike Stalin, unlike Mao Zedong, even unlike Luther or Calvin, he said they are not tempted to use the slime of frustrated souls as mortar in the building of a new world. They know that no one can be honorable unless he honors mankind, from page 147. So there's a lot for us to talk about. I don't think it's too heavy for talk radio. I think it's right on target for talk radio in light of what's going on now in this country. And I think that we should talk about it. It's that simple. And I'm very happy with the opening to the show. I hope you are as well. There are no open lines, because I have found something to be true in talk radio. If you bait your hook with your heart, the fish will always bite. If you bait your show with interesting, truthful subject matter, the lines become immediately impacted with people dying to comment one way or the other. And that's what we will be doing. This, and do you think God had a hand in this election? Did your church ask you to pray for America before the election? Did you pray for Clinton's defeat and for Trump's victory? And many other topics, except the headlines from websites, which I will leave to others, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is the Savage Nation, the new intolerance in America, opposing a political theocracy is the topic. I see some dangerous trends emerging rapidly because I dared suggest constructive criticism yesterday. It's a man's opinion. I'm an opinion maker. I didn't like this reaching out to Taiwan or taking the call, whichever way it was, so I expressed it. Well, there came the trolls. There came the true believers. There they were. They weren't arguing with the subject, they were arguing with me and trying to smear me, which is becoming all too frequent in America today. You understand what I'm saying to you? And if we become just like the opposition, then what have we gained? We've gained nothing. Now, I made a prediction on this show yesterday that the Trump team would soon start firing some of the people around him because of the intolerance that I see emerging. You're not going to believe what just occurred. It just came out. New York Post. Michael Flynn's conspiracy-loving son kicked off Trump's transition team. I had no idea this man was even on there. But he was on there. Michael Flynn Jr., the conspiracy theory-loving son of Donald Trump's national security advisor, got bounced from the president-elect's transition team Tuesday, that's today, over his bizarre tweets about Pizzagate. Under the theory pushed by Alex Jones and other members of the so-called alt-right, Hillary Clinton and aide John Podesta are linked to a child sex ring based in a Washington, D.C. pizza restaurant. Well, they fired him. Earlier in the day, VP-elect Mike Pence said on MSNBC's Morning Joe that Flynn Jr. had no involvement in the transition whatsoever. Well, unfortunately, he was making that up, because CNN revealed Monday that the younger Flynn had an official .gov email address. So that's lie number one. And Foreign Policy magazine also reported that the younger Flynn assisted in personnel vetting, managing his father's schedule, and fielding transition-related emails for the general. On Twitter, Flynn Jr. had suggested that Pizzagate was true. I don't want to go into the Pizzagate story at all. I do want you to understand what I'm saying to you, which is that the members of the transition team who are misaligning the Trump campaign, the incoming Trump presidency, are going to be out of there soon. And they started with him, by the way. Because the conspiracy theories are not what Trump needs, number one. But the insular nature of the transition team is also the last thing that the Trump campaign and Trump presidency needs. They must not cut themselves off from constructive advice, no matter where it comes from. It's that simple. WKZO in Michigan, Daniel Line 5, what's your topic? Fire away.
Hi, Mr. Savage. When Obama got elected, I was very confused because I pray all the time. I'm a Christian. And I realized the Bible teaches that all work together for the good, for those that love the Lord. And I realized that Obama and the left gave us Donald Trump. When the American people seen how vile and nasty these people really are, they come in groves to vote and support Donald Trump. And the churches were filling up bigger than I'd seen in 30 years. But I've always...
Well, no, this is so important because no one's touched on this. I asked, do you think God had a hand in this election? Did your church ask you to pray for America before the election? Did you pray for Clinton's defeat, for Trump's victory? You are saying yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and you know, Mr. Savage, you can...
Hold on, we're almost out of time on this. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
What is this today? Maybe it's me. I can't stand it. It's one of Metallica's worst songs. Okay, so I believe Trump accidentally picked a fight with China. I believe he was misled. Let me summarize it for you. By the lobbyist Bob Dole, a very shameful man. You know, I used to love Bob Dole because he was a great hero in World War II, injured as a member of the, I think, the 1st Mountain Division in one of the assaults in World War II in Italy. He was injured and in a hospital for 3 years. I thought he was a fine man, and he probably was. And then he became a senator, Bob Dole, and he even ran for the presidency because we all respected him. He was sort of an Eisenhower-like guy. And then something happened when he was out of office. He got steered into becoming a consultant for China. That is, a lobbyist, rather. And he, Madeleine Albright, became one and the same. Just lobbyists selling their country out for 30 pieces of silver. And then we find out today that it was Bob Dole who is on the payroll of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Representative Office in the United States, and that he and this group, the law firm that Dole works for, played a role in arranging the phone call. In other words, the lobbyists influenced Donald Trump's taking or making that call. And let me say very clearly, we don't need a fight with China right now. We didn't need it. We don't need it. And the mere fact that it is a controversy, and believe me, it's a controversy in China. If it's not a controversy in the minds of the true believers here, for whom nothing that this team does can be wrong, China media is saying rookie Trump must fall into line. Now, I know it's a communist front group, the newspaper, but that's what they're saying in their most important newspaper. Did we need this fight with China right now? I don't believe we needed it, nor do we need it at any time. Negotiate behind closed doors. Do it so that the opposing partner can save face. Now, I know many of you are saying, no, 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 look what they've gotten away with. China's a miserable nation. They've done this to us. They've done that. It's time someone kicked them in the teeth. That's stupid. In plain English, you're just being stupid. You're not thinking diplomatically. You're not thinking like a nation thinks. You're thinking like a thug. You're just reacting like a street thug would think. It's not the way things are done in the world. It leads to wars. Wars lead to injury and death. And most of you who are sending off these stupid comments, attacking anyone who dares say a word of criticism, are you willing to put on a uniform and go fight a war? Of course not. So why are you feeding the war machine? You have to understand that Bob Dole represents not only the Taiwanese government, but the law firm that he represents is also a member in good standing of the government military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower warned us about. We don't want them regaining control of America. Is that what you want? You want the military-industrial complex running the country again? Are you people nuts? Have you learned nothing from history? WABC Bruce, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
On your mind. Dr. Savage, when you mentioned this first thing this afternoon, the immediate picture I had was the Boxer Rebellion. You know,
okay, I understand you said it with bated breath. Like, and how does it relate to the Boxer Rebellion? I know what it was. I know when it occurred. But what does it have to do with this?
Their game wasn't about finance. It was about the drug trade and about control. And they took on China. China's been around for thousands and thousands of years. And the Trump people, this Bob Dole crowd, really put Trump in a lose-lose situation. And they need to take your insight and your wisdom and use that to protect the United States of America. Or as you warned, Dwight D. Eisenhower, military complex.
Right. I don't think this has any... Look, okay, half of what you said I understand and agree with. The first part, I see no relationship to the Boxer Rebellion, which was an internal revolution that was led by martial artists in China against the corruption of the Chinese warlords and against the British who were dumping opium on China and turning the people into drug slaves. It has nothing to do with this. I don't see the relationship.
Well, I saw the drug trade being a financial trade, okay?
That's not, but it's a mis. It's misleading. The other part I agree with. The military-industrial complex, in this case, the Bob Dole lobbyists, are from the swamp, aren't they? Aren't they the exact swamp creatures that Trump wanted to get rid of in Washington?
Washington, yep.
All right, so here we have one of the chief reptiles in the swamp, Bob Dole, directing policy. How much more clear can I be? He's a swamp creature. Thank you for the call, that's all. No free gifts today. No free gifts for the... I'll start giving out teddies at Teddy and Me's. Teddy, you want your book given out today? I guess he does. He wants people to enjoy themselves. So let us see what else is going on. So Trump fired the internal crowd, fired just today. This is new news. It's important news. It's important news on three different levels. Michael Flynn's conspiracy-loving son kicked off Trump's transition team. That's a positive move. That means they are listening to people. That means they are seeing that they're being misled by the extreme right wing. You know, there are varieties, you know. There's extreme right. I don't know where they came up with alt-right. Alt-right, extreme right. What's the difference? There's a crazy right wing. Let's put it to you that way. Just as there's crazy left-wingers, and then there's left-wingers, and then there are moderate liberals, and then there's liberals. There's a whole spectrum of right wing. And I want to go back to my beginnings in radio in case you don't know where I'm coming from. When I began in radio in 1994, my program director was a little leery of me. He didn't know because nobody was a conservative in the San Francisco area on radio at that time. There were none. And he knew I was a rational, highly educated man. He knew me personally, knew as I was a decent person. He knew my family. But he didn't know where my politics were coming from. And he said to me, what exactly do you believe in? And I said, I believe in conservative principles. I believe in America's borders, language, and culture. But I added this. I said, but I have a very strong, thick firewall between my beliefs and the far, far right, where reside the Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and the others. That's where I've been forever. I've never gone over that firewall for a number of reasons. And what happened here is that some of those from the other side of the firewall, I'm sorry to tell you, inveigled their way inside, and they're purging them now by getting rid of Flynn's crazy son with the Pizzagate job, saying that the Podesta and Hillary were involved in a sex club with children. Do you know how crazy this is? Pizzagate insanity. So the theory was tweeted by Flynn Jr., and the Pizzagate thing was brought up. And this guy, Flynn Jr., was on Twitter all the time, pushing forward half-baked conspiracy theories. And he's out. I think what happened here is they're coming to understand, in their own inner circle, the limitations of their followers and where their true followers reside. Now, I want to move on. I don't want to get stuck into this. I think we're going to get stuck. I think we can move on to the issue of the Electoral College. I found a very interesting little cartoon on the Electoral College that was put together in clip number one. Let's hear that just to break things up a bit, Robert.
The Electoral College isn't a college that decides if you get a diploma, but it does decide if you get to be President of the United States. In the United States, citizens over the age of 18 can vote in presidential elections. This is called the popular vote. But it's the Electoral College that actually chooses the president. And you need 270 electoral votes to become president. The Founding Fathers created the Electoral College because they worried states with smaller populations might not get fairly represented. They also didn't think the common man was informed enough to choose a suitable president. So they created the Electoral College. Today it has 538 members. That's one for every member of the House of Representatives and Senate, representing all 50 states. In addition, Washington, D.C. has 3 Electoral College members. To win the presidency, you must win at least 270 electoral votes. And to win electoral votes, for the most part, you need to win the popular vote in each state. By winning California's popular vote, you take home the state's 55 electoral votes. And if you win the popular vote in Texas, you win that state's 38 electoral votes. This is called a winner-take-all system. But sometimes a candidate wins the popular vote nationally, but doesn't amass enough electoral votes. This happened in 2000. Democratic candidate Al Gore won the popular vote nationwide. Yet Republican George W. Bush won Florida in a close contest. That was enough to give him the electoral vote victory.
Okay, so we do have this thing emerging because one of the electors in Texas, a Republican, said he will not vote for Trump. It's not going to be reversed, but it is still contested, and it's primarily being driven by the crackpot Jill Stein for the Green Party nut for two reasons. One, to raise money, which they'll use, you know, in their own way, making believe it's for campaigns, but you know what it means. Expenses, meals, travel, this, that. And then, of course, it gives her more power, and it also damages Donald Trump's ability to forge policy in the future, because they say he's an unpopular candidate, he didn't really win, blah, blah, blah. So they're trying to weaken him. That's all this is about. And, of course, my guess is that Hillary is behind it and the entire Democrat machine. It's politics. WFTL, Florida. I want to be down there. Sharon, I want to be down in Florida. I got to go to Florida next week. What's on your mind, Sharon?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I wanted to thank you, first off, especially within the last two broadcasts, for you bringing common sense back to the table. Whether you agree with people on the far left or the far right, we all have to have something in common, which is the ability to think critically and be reasonable. And I want to thank you for that, Dr. Savage.
Well, Sharon, the topic of my show today is the new intolerance in America, opposing a political theocracy. And did you hear the opening monologue or you missed it?
I missed it. I caught the very end.
Oh, you really missed the germ of the show, the essence of it. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm putting it up. It's actually up right now in an early form on the new intolerance in America, opposing a political theocracy. It's up on michaelsavage.com. You want to go to that at home and you can read it. Almost exactly word for word what I said in writing, okay?
Yes.
And it ends with this: the worship of any politician is akin to a fundamentalist religious mindset. To the true believer, either you believe or you don't believe. Either you believe in God or you don't believe in God. Either you believe in a politician or you don't believe in a politician. Here is where the danger resides. Just as there are no absolutes in science, there is no absolutely pure correct political system. We've seen what happens when a dictator insists on imposing his political views on the masses. North Korea, Cuba. To a lesser degree, we have seen this under Obama, where there is virtually no opposition. We must remain vigilant with the man we elected to ensure that our hope for him in America does not become blind worship. Is that what you're referring to about common sense, Sharon?
Yes, it is.
Well, no truer words have been written by me in quite a while. It's on michaelsavage.com. The new intolerance in America. I hope that, you know, I don't know. I know that during the campaign, I know this for a fact, a very prominent member of Mr. Trump's inner circle listened to the show religiously, especially 3 months, 4 months, 5 months before the election. And I know that he was sending some of my comments to people who were very important. We heard some of the speeches. They were influenced by the show, and it made me feel good to realize I was influencing an election. Well, now that we've elected Donald Trump, we have to make certain that they continue to listen to the show. They can't now disconnect themselves from the people who were instrumental in electing Donald Trump. You see, you don't represent, by and large, the extreme right wing in the country. My audience is much larger than that. It is not an extremist audience. In fact, I know from the San Francisco audience, and I've known this since the 1990s, they were all surprised to find out how many people who identify as Democrats or liberals listen to my show, listen to it religiously, and still vote Democrat. And the reason they do it, well, there's manifest reasons as to why they listen. So my audience is much larger than that small spectrum that has inveigled its way through the firewall into the Donald Trump engine. Okay? Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. We're back on the show. Here's a couple other headlines that caught my eye this morning. Owner of Oakland Rave Cave was a negligent father and drug addict. No. You mean all of the poor people who died were not upstanding American citizens? I'm surprised that they haven't been given the Presidential Medal of Freedom yet to the owner of the Rave Cave. The man who ran the illegal ghost ship, Artist Enclave in Oak. Artist. Everyone's an artist. I mean, I'm very sorry that they died. They're human beings. They were just out for a party. No one deserves to die like that. But I must say to you, to now glorify everyone who was at the drug-fueled sex cave, we're not great Americans. I mean, let's stop already with the worship. 36 people died in the fire Friday night. The man who ran it was a deadbeat dad who neglected his children to hold drug-fueled sex parties inside the warehouse, according to family and friends, as published in the New York Post. A pair of caregivers for Derek Ion Almina's three children told the Daily Mail that the free-spirited 46-year-old would often leave the children with them for up to 5 days at a time while he got strung out with his wife, Micah Allison, and ran off to Bali and other places for their little fun sex parties. And then she'd come back and say, "Oh, we danced under the moon. It was this transcendent experience, recalled Mariah Benavides, who was just 16 years old when she started watching Almina's three children, ages 14, 8, and 5. So they would disappear, go out on these little ventures there, dump the kids. Then he ran this thing down here, and someone says, "When would you call a crack house a crack house?" Anyway, there's 36 people dead, others injured for life, period.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage. Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
In Galactica today, we are discussing the new intolerance in America, opposing a political theocracy. We have disclosed that the man behind the Taiwan phone call is none other than the swamp creature himself, the lobbyist from Washington, D.C., Bob Dole. We told you that the owner of the Oakland Rave Cave, where 36 people died in a fire on Friday night, according to the New York Post, was a negligent father and a drug addict. And now, here's something new. Muslim Council of Britain says it's up to white British to integrate, not Muslims. Oh, yeah. A senior representative of the fascistic Muslim Council of Britain said that white people in Britain have a responsibility to integrate more to prevent communities becoming ghettoized. Now, don't you love that one? It's no longer when in Rome, do as the Romans do. It's when in Rome, steal their welfare and make the Romans do as you do, because the Romans have no guts anymore. It's lucky the Romans still have sandals. Anyway, you got that picture. But I'd like to take your calls on all the topics I've touched on thus far. 855-472-82, 855-472-SAVAGE is the phone number. Let's have a few other sound bites first to trigger some of the conversation. As you know, we should not have picked a fight with China, in my opinion. And our current ambassador to China, you may say he's a bad one. I could argue he might be, in that they have run all over us. And he is Obama's ambassador to China, Chris Hill. But he does make sense, in a way, in what he says in clip number 3. Let's listen.
Is that in his coming presidency, dealing with China is going to be one of the main issues. So the question is, has he kind of picked a little fight with them? Frankly, you don't need to pick a fight with them, because we already have some disputes with them. We have differences over South China Sea. We have trade issues. We have intellectual property rights. We have North Korea to figure out a way forward. So there's plenty of stuff to do. So you do kind of wonder why add to that.
Right. That's the way that's exactly right. In other words, why do this now when we have all the other issues to deal with? And then he goes on 4. Listen to this one.
It's a pretty big place. I mean, we're talking 1.4 billion people. There are 28 million people in Taiwan. The U.S. has a very good relationship with Taiwan, which is regulated through something called the Taiwan Relations Act. It's an unofficial relationship. But then official relations with China are spelled out in one China policy, and it works fine. So the real question is, if it's not broke, then why are we trying to fix it?
Well, that's not the question, Mr. Hill. I mean, the question is, we know what the One China policy is, which is that they're going to regobble Taiwan, which we all oppose, by the way. We oppose that, and I want to make that very clear. But whether we oppose it or not is almost not the issue. Are we willing to go to war for Taiwan? Isn't that the pregnant question beneath the surface? Because of the lobbyists in Washington, D.C., namely Bob Dole, we have now staked out a position under the incoming president, saying, you know what, don't touch Taiwan and we'll go to war with you over Taiwan. Well, maybe we will. Maybe that's what the military-industrial complex has been salivating for. That's what the RNC wants. That's what Renzo Previous wants. That's what the Heritage Foundation wants. They actually want confrontation. They have wanted it in Iraq. How did that work out for us? What, now they want it in the South China Sea? How will that work out for us? Well, let's now raise the real big question. Are we going to wake up tomorrow and see a statement about Israel? Something about the West Bank, i.e. Judea and Samaria, to the Jewish people? Are we going to see a statement before the president-elect is the president, stating unequivocally that there will never be a two-party solution, that Israel will be unified under the Jewish people? What would happen if he did that? Or conversely, which I don't expect to happen, will we hear a statement from the Trump administration perhaps a phone call with the leader of the Palestinian people. Let's put it in that context. What if there was a phone call with the leader of the Palestinian people saying it was just a courtesy call? That would set off a shockwave, wouldn't it? Well, it's akin to what just happened with Taiwan on a much smaller scale. Do you need that right now? Is that what we need going into a new administration with all the problems that we have? We need to start a war now in the Middle East and in China? No. So I hope you understand what I'm talking about and how I'm, you know, coming at it. WABC Tom, line one, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind this beautiful, cold Tuesday here in San Francisco?
All right. How you doing, Mike? I appreciate taking my call. Let me be quick because I know your time is valuable. I have 3 points, and I hope you can bear with me. My first point is, number one, for the first time, now I'm a long-time listener. I listened to you from the city driving back to Long Island for the last 5 years. Now, number one, for the first time since I've listened to you, I feel as though you're kind of grabbing at straws since the election, creating topics just to keep your show going. I hate to even say that.
You could say it, so let me answer it, since you've just accused me of something that is false. You mean I created the Taiwan controversy, not Donald Trump?
I think with Bill, I was speaking to another person about this who listens to you. It's as if you substituted Trump's name with Obama's name.
You're not listening to me, Tom. Did I create this controversy or did the Trump campaign do it?
Well, it's a combination. I mean, media creates controversy.
Do you have any idea that this is a major story in China, or do you dismiss 1.2 billion people as meaningless and insignificant when they are a major military and economic power? Should we not pay attention to them?
Well, we should pay attention to them, but unless I'm...
Right, but I'm the only one on this side of the aisle who has the foresight to understand that what is done here in America has ramifications around the world. And that although it may not be that big an issue to some in this country, it is a huge issue to the people who were antagonized by that move. So you can't accuse me of making an issue up that doesn't exist. It's all over the news. This is a huge story. Now, why do I talk about it? Why do you think I'm talking about it? Because unless we, those of us who support Donald Trump and still support him, supported and still support him, are willing to stand up and say, no, Mr. Trump, we support you, but you made a mistake here. He's going to continue to go off in his own direction. Don't you think we have a right and an obligation, for that matter, to voice our opposition to some of his decisions?
I'm 100% with you, but to accuse your listeners and Trump supporters and saying, if you support Trump, unless I misunderstood, if you support Trump, then you, with the Taiwan issue, then you are on the right side of the firewall, to me was absurd. Now, did you say that? Was I wrong? Did I miss?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that you're on the right side of the firewall. I was talking in generic terms or general terms about the new intolerance in America, meaning that anyone who opposes a viewpoint of Trump is now being cast aside as an outsider. That's what I was saying.
Okay, do you have time for a third point? This was my main point, actually. And it's
go ahead. You're an intelligent caller who we disagree on something, but this is what conversation is about, disagreement, and then coming to terms if you can come to terms.
A week ago, you said, I'm not speaking about politics, and which I enjoy. You said my mind is on the side of spirituality, and I need to talk about God. I think, because you say you have a calling, I think that is where you really want to go wholeheartedly, but something's holding you back. This week and late last week, your voice really had very little inflection. For the first time, I really didn't listen to you. It was kind of flat. I hate to say that.
Oh, boy. You seem to be a real, true listener to this show. You know more about me than my psychiatrist does, and I don't see one.
Well, but when you spoke about spirituality and God, you lit up, and I'm sure your lines lit up and your listeners lit up.
I know, but I don't want to get sidetracked. I don't want to get trapped into that discussion and make that exclusively the show. I don't want to make this God talk day and night.
It doesn't have to be, but you have a gift of intertwining people's lives and their reaction and their.
Tom, are you a religious person?
Am I religious? I have a faith with I it helps me through the day. I fail a lot of times, most of the times, but I try to keep strong.
No, but I'm saying, are you a very religious individual? Church or synagogue? Do you go and pray a lot?
I go on Sundays, but lately I have not been going because I'm aggravated with my priest. Listen, the last two Sundays, the sermon is about this unbridled, quote-unquote, capitalism and how we have to control it.
That's the inveigle. Are you a Catholic? So that's the Pope's Marxist poison has seeped into the pulpit.
Yeah, there's a cop right next to me. Oh, boy. All right, go ahead. Yep.
So what I'm hearing from you, a loyal listener who's listening to my every breath, my intonation, my moods, and my emotions, is that you want me, in essence, to revitalize your spirituality.
Well,
you wanted me to be the preacher for the last few weeks of December who would revitalize your belief in God and give you a new faith or revitalize your faith. I think that's what you're saying. So let me answer that. I go in and out of these phases of religiosity, to put it any other way. I'm not one of these people who 7 days a week, 24/7, walking around with this whole sense of urgency to talk about God and to relate to God. And in that sense, I'm very comfortable because I'm an ordinary man in that regard. Some days I have more of a spiritual leaning than others. Some days I have an absolute understanding that God exists and there's nothing to worry about. And some days I think the opposite is also true. I don't believe that there's anything outside of us. And it goes back and forth and it moves around. And I feel comfortable in saying it. I'd be a phony to say it any other way. But years ago when Mother Teresa was alive, remember her?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Well, you know, she gave me great comfort. She was a great woman. She was a saintly woman. And, you know, even my mother, who was not a Catholic, loved Mother Teresa. She was inspired by her because my mother was a humble woman who was a kind woman. And Mother Teresa touched people from other religions with her kindness, which approached saintliness. But Mother Teresa, as kindly and as saintly as she was, said in her last years, her memoirs said that there were many times that she didn't believe in God. She lost her faith completely, but she didn't tell anyone about it during her lifetime because she was afraid to do so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is that that enabled me and empowered me to tell you that sometimes I don't, sometimes I do.
That's the most human way. I mean, that's the most human analysis of faith. I mean, nobody could walk the walk 24/7. We have weaknesses and temptation, and then we have great days where we could, we feel like Superman. I understand.
Right. You walk around, you take a deep breath, the sun is shining, there's a little puppy, there's a baby in a carriage with a happy mother or father, and the birds are tweeting in the trees, and you feel terrific, right?
Yeah. Quick story. I was working in...
All right, I got to move this along. I hope that you have some satisfaction in the discussion, but I could keep talking with you all day, but it would be to the exclusion of all the others who want to get on the air. It's now 20 minutes after the hour. We moved along on that. I've dealt with one accusation and one question. And if you have any other questions or accusations, the phone number is 855-400-7282.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. So, I was talking about the new intolerance in America, opposing a political theocracy, but I think many of you are still misinterpreting what I am saying. We are still living under the most hateful administration in American history. And I was referring to The True Believer by Eric Hoffer, a book written in the 1951 era. And he talks about mass movements and unifying agents, and it makes me think of Obama and the tools he used. He wrote this: hatred is the most accessible and comprehensive of all unifying agents. It pulls and whirls the individual away from his own self. It makes him oblivious of his wheel and future, frees him of jealousies and self-seeking, and he becomes an anonymous particle quivering with a craving to fuse and coalesce with his like into one flaming mass. He's talking about hatred as a unifying theme used by demagogues. And I wrote these notes. I said, yes, to hatreds that Obama has used, the tools he's used. What are the targets that Obama has used? Well, white people, the quote rich, guns and gun owners, polluters. These are all the targets that Obama has used to spread his hatred. In other words, the devils. The devils of Obama are now going to be put back where they belong, sent back to where they belong. The common hatreds that Obama has stirred up will eventually be driven back into the holes that they came out of. These hatreds will disappear. Now, I realize that Obama is no Hitler. I get that. He's no Stalin. I get that as well. But he has been and is and remains to this day a dangerous demagogue who has stirred up hatred for white people, hatred for people who have achieved any sort of wealth or success in this country, a hatred for those of us who own anything. It's all been done calculatingly by Barack Obama and his minions of left-wing fanatics. That's why I worked so hard to have you vote for Donald Trump. Let's hope this is all behind us. And as I've said before, and I'll say it again, even if I disagree with Donald Trump from time to time, it does not mean that I don't know that we're 1,000% better off than we would be had the she-devil won. You would not be seeing minor controversies such as that of Taiwan today. It would be a full frontal assault and attack upon everything we hold dear to ourselves.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
I think junkie musicians are going to have to change their tune soon. It's a whole new country, and they know it, too. I heard that Google is having to hire a conservative outreach manager now to talk with the new administration. I mean, Facebook is going to have to hire one to talk to the other half of the country and the administration. It's really interesting. And there's going to be a sea change in the media. As I am sitting here and as you are listening there, mark my words, there is going to be a sea change on the networks. This constant, limitless attack upon the white male is going to come to a crashing halt. Every ad that I have seen over the last number of years has nauseated me. I've wanted to throw things through the television screen. Every white male has been shown has been seen as a weakling moron. Either a woman tells him what to do or a minority is ruling the roost. Everywhere you turn. And that's coming to an end. The pendulum has swung so far to the idiocy of the left that it is inevitable that the pendulum swings back to the middle. And, of course, we are going to see commentators in the major media who represent the other half of America. Not in the main seats, of course. They'll continue to have their left-wing puppets, the Stephanopoli and the Tapperi, the Blitzeri, will remain secure in their left on their left-wing perches, throwing their peanut shells upon us. But there will be alternative opinions that currently don't exist on these networks. HBO, when have you last seen anything that even remotely resembles an American or traditional or conservative point of view? Never. Never. The people who run HBO, Showtime, and the other major national cable operators, they're going to start appealing to those of us who have these cable channels who have been locked out of their madness, and they're going to start to produce shows that represent our point of view as well. You're going to see this over the next year or so. Not overnight, but it's going to happen. This election's had huge impacts across the landscape. And, you know, the left-wingers who said they'd leave America when Trump won, so far as I know, none of them have left. Not one of them has boarded an airplane for anywhere. their own airplane or any commercial jet. They're all here. All the haters have suddenly turned coat. They know which way the wind blows, and they have always been puppets. Look at Robert De Niro, a fabulous actor, a moron politically, locked into doxies that are out of step with reality. During the campaign, a mook, a bum, a this, a that, attacked Donald Trump left and right. I'll punch him in the nose. The minute Trump won, all of a sudden, Mr. Raging Bull became a different person altogether. He realized that he made an idiot of himself. He gambled and lost. And he also realized that you, the listener of shows like this, would tune out his movies and tune out his reruns. Because I told you what I do now. I've kept the list of all of the people I've seen as the most hateful in the media, and I will not watch any of their shows, even on rerun. If I'm scanning the television channels, we all have too many of them to begin with, and I see any of them, I scan right over it. I do not stop on anything with Robert De Niro, Chris Rock. I can name 10 of them. A few of them. I don't remember all of them on top of my head. But they all showed themselves to be so biased, such left-wing haters, in fact, such racists, that I won't watch them. Even in rerun, even in passing. So that's going to change. WABC Line 4. Steve, what's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. You know, I just want to address the guy who's sitting on the LIE driving home who said that you're doing this for theater. He said to enhance your ratings or something by shedding light on the delicate nature of relations with China and how catastrophic it would be for us to get into any kind of a shooting war with them, okay? And I think that he needs to reevaluate maybe what he said, okay?
I'm listening. You have the microphone now in your car. It's called the iPhone. So what's your main point?
Usually, many analogies are false equivalences, but you made a wonderful analogy with this phone call, with, you know, a hypothetical phone call with the leader of the Palestinian Authority, you know, that whole thing. It was well done, and I thought it was well thought out. And this guy, like, somehow took offense to it. You know, you can disagree.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. A lot of them love my show, but they listen to other shows, and their brains pick up different information, and they want to be true believers, and they want to support Trump no matter what. I know that the tendency is there because he's not yet in the seat, and we want to support him. We all have that feeling. But I think this was a blunder that is worthy of discussion because of the magnitude of the blunder and the magnitude of the potential problems. I felt that it's a very important topic.
And one of the things that I find...
Well, let me ask you, Steve. Did you vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton?
You're far from it.
No, Steve. Did you vote for Trump or Clinton?
No, I did not. Look, I did not vote for Donald Trump, but not for the reasons you're talking about.
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Clinton. I did.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right. So now, here's the problem. We're going to get all of the Trump bashers calling and agreeing with me, which is making the wrong point. It's the whole wrong point. The real question is, do you still have faith in his team to make all the right decisions? Are you willing to criticize the Donald Trump team when necessary? And what is the difference between the worship of Obama on the left and the worship of Trump? And do you believe that Trump is being influenced by the right people or by some of the wrong people? And these are the real questions. That's why I'm discussing this topic. Charles on WSBA in Pennsylvania has one of the most important questions and comments of the day. It has nothing to do with the issues that we're talking about, but it's something that's very dear to me. Charles on line 7, go ahead, you have the floor.
Thank you, Doc. I'm Charles Strange, Gold Star father of Michael Strange, killed in action August.
God bless you and what you sacrifice for this nation. I know who Mr. Strange is. Your son was a great American hero. Go and tell the story of what was done to him and the other Navy SEALs, and by whom.
They were in a Chinook helicopter, and they were told the Rangers were pinned down in trouble, and they all jumped in the Chinook, 1960 Chinook helicopter, and they were hit by an RPG. It was a setup. There was 100 Taliban waiting for them, and and they were all killed. It was the biggest loss of life in Iraq and Afghanistan, the biggest loss of life in the history of America, 22 men from Dev Group, Navy Special Warfare, by somebody on Pennsylvania.
And I was so offended by it that I went on the air and I said, this was a setup to kill the team. Did I not do that on this show?
Thank you so much, and you're 100% right, sir.
And how many times did I say at the time of that assassination of this SEAL team that somebody inside the Pentagon or the State Department ordered this mission to death and that they must be uncovered and they must be tried? I said it over and over again. And you had a hearing in Congress that went nowhere. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
Who was it in Congress who permitted this hearing to be conducted, Mr. Strange?
Jason from Utah.
All right, I hear your lovely wife in the background. I remember her as well. You both lost a great heroic son. There's nothing that anyone could do to replace your son, but what you're seeking here is justice, isn't that it?
Yes, yes. We still have Larry Klayman. He's also representing the Benghazi families, but we're going down in April once Mr. Trump gets settled in there, and we're going to bang on the doors. Larry filed against Karzai. We subpoenaed Karzai. We won. That don't mean we're going to get anywhere. But
all right, so let me ask you this. For the people who are listening to the show today, their minds are elsewhere. Just let's repeat what happened. First of all, the entire Navy SEAL team was put into a slow-moving old Chinook helicopter from the Vietnam era. They were not put into two fast attack helicopters on that mission. Am I correct or incorrect so far?
100% correct.
All right. Why were they put onto an old, slow-turning helicopter, number one? Number two, they were sent down the same flight path that they had gone down before. It's like going down a highway where you know that there are bandits waiting for you with machine guns. Why were they sent down that highway? Number three, who do you think did this to them and why? Are you there? You can put your wife on the phone. Women are welcome on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mr. Savage.
Hi there. So that you're still able to laugh and still have a life is a beautiful thing. And I know that one of the things that would give you a reason to live would be to find out who in the Pentagon or the State Department or the executive office itself sent these brave men in the SEAL team to their death. Who do you think did this?
I believe in my heart it was tit for tat. We'll give you Bin Laden. We want the team that took him out. And it has to go to the highest level of our government.
All right, so now what SEAL team was this? This was six, correct?
Yes, sir.
And isn't this the team that killed Osama bin Laden?
Yes, yes.
And all of them were put on one helicopter, a slow-turning helicopter, sent to their deaths, in your opinion, on purpose. And no one has paid for this disastrous treason.
Nobody has given up. Nobody charged with anything. Nobody reprimanded. Nothing has happened. The guy that did the investigation, like Pat Tillman, Jeffrey Colt, that did the investigation, got promoted. They promoted him, Doc.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. and Mrs. Strange. The new general, Defense Department Chief Mattis, tell me where you stand on him.
I like Mad Dog. I like what he says, you know. Take no prisoners. But them people over there in the Middle East hate us. They hate us, Doc. And what are we still doing there? 16 years now.
Well, there's a lot of money to be made in the military-industrial complex. You know, I was so moved by this terrible tragedy in which your son was killed and the others that I wrote a novel entitled A Time for War. And I started it by talking about a scene right out of the pages of the news about a helicopter just like that over a valley just like that that was crashed to earth, not through a rocket, but by a blast from a device that disabled all of their electronics and had the helicopter then plummet to earth. I wrote the novel, A Time for War. It sold, you know, a fair number, 50,000 copies in hardcover, which is significant in one way, but it didn't make a dent in the national mind. And I tried my best. I was so upset by this that a government could kill its number one heroes and get away with it that I decided to devote an entire novel to it. You know, I don't know if you know that, but that's what I did.
Yes, yes, we do. Thank you so much. Thank you.
It's only a book. It's only a book. It's nothing. I can't imagine, I pray to God I never have to imagine, what this did to your hearts and to your souls. To raise a boy. Ooh, I could start to smash things right now. I could start breaking stuff. I could start breaking things in this room right now. So I'll stop right there because I will get carried away and I don't want to. I would love to see the bastards inside this government who sent them to their death. I'd like to see them hanging in public. I'd love to see them ferreted out. I'd like to see them hanging in public after they're found guilty.
Amen. Do you know where we're driving from right now, Doc? From
no.
Arlington. We just came from Arlington. And we put 17.7 on each of the guys' graves that are buried there.
Distortion 17.
Yeah.
It's Doc. I can't keep pressing, keep talking about Extortion 17 and my son Michael. We appreciate it, and we're going to be banging on the doors with Larry Klayman again in April. I just talked to Larry yesterday, and trying to get somebody held accountable for this.
Now the Trump's at all.
Somebody did this. Somebody did this to your son and his hero buddies. Somebody listening to this show right now knows that somebody. As sure as I'm standing here, there are guilty parties listening to this show who must be found out, tried, and executed for treason.
Yeah, absolutely.
God bless you. Stay strong. We'll do the best we can to uncover the traitors within.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Let's go right to the callers. The time is almost up in the first 2 hours. Jaron, KBET Radio, go ahead, please. Fire away.
Dr. Savage, first of all, I did vote for Trump, and I did do a lot of screen. I just wanted to, based on the last call you just took with SEAL Team 6 and those parents, I wanted to ask you why you think the government did that. Were they trying, obviously they were trying to silence these guys, or there's something...
No. The parents themselves believe that the SEAL Team 6 was executed as payback for having killed Osama bin Laden. It was a sacrifice made to our enemies themselves right within the Obama administration. That's the theory of the parents who lost these sons, not my theory.
Okay. Maybe you could elaborate on your theory later in the show. Just real quick, I want to say congratulations on the Hall of Fame. I found you in college. I went to a very liberal university 10 years ago, University of Colorado at Boulder. They're right up there at Berkeley with their mental...
Right. University of Colorado at Shoulder, yeah.
You were like therapy for me. There were many a days I turned on your show after being in classes, and I would sit there listening to these liberals talk, and your line from that book just kept repeating in my head. Okay, liberalism is a mental disorder. I had to remind myself of
that. Yeah, well, that'll get you through a lot, because when you compute what they're saying or what they are doing, and it makes no sense whatever, all you've got to do is say liberalism is a mental disorder, and it explains everything. They are mentally ill. You flood the streets with the homeless bums, and then they say they don't know why there's crime and dirt in the streets, because they're mentally disordered, for example. Have a rave and have people die. They don't know why it happened.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
So here's the really big story of the day. SoftBank of Japan comes to America. The head of SoftBank of Japan goes to Trump Tower, and he says he's going to invest $50 billion in the U.S. and create 50,000 jobs. That's a huge victory for Donald Trump on many levels. And the subtext of the story is that the CEO of this great bank, who's going to invest $50 billion in the U.S., said that he wouldn't do it if it wasn't for Donald Trump being president because it's of the deregulation that's coming. And because of the deregulation and the lowering of taxes, we're going to see floods of money coming into America, investments and jobs. SoftBank, based in Tokyo, is Japan's number three cellular telephone company. And the billionaire son holds investments in several American corporations, including Sprint. He purchased his Sprint stake for $22 billion in 2013. $22 billion. Last year, his company, SoftBank, was the leader in a $1 billion investment in Social Finance, Inc., an online lending company right here in San Francisco, the Journal reports. This man, Son, made his fortune on investments in Japan and China, and he came to meet with Donald Trump in New York. Listen to this. The billionaire from Japan told the Wall Street Journal that this U.S. investment would come from a $100 billion fund that he is organizing with the Saudi Arabian Wealth Fund and other partners. It's an amazing story. Trump's announcement today came after saying earlier that he was canceling the ridiculous order for a new Air Force One, charging that costs are out of control more than $4 billion. You see, the federal government's contract for the 747 jet was to be about $3 billion. So let's listen to clip number two with Donald Trump on the Air Force One contract, which he's canceling.
The plane is totally out of control. It's going to be over $4 billion. It's for Air Force One program. And I think it's ridiculous. I think Boeing is doing a little bit of a number. We want Boeing to make a lot of money, but not that much money. Okay, thank you.
That's a great line. See, that's the Donald Trump that we all love. We want Boeing to make a little... We want Boeing to make a lot of money, but not that much money. Now, that's pretty brilliant, right? That's good. So no Air Force One for $4 billion. He wouldn't even fly in it. Won't be ready till like 2020. I just, God forbid, who's going to be the president by then, right? But this is a big investment. Masa, SoftBank of Japan, has agreed to invest $50 billion in the U.S. towards businesses and 50,000 new jobs. And Masa said he would never do this had Trump not won the election. Why? Because Hillary would have added red tape and added taxes. It would not have been a good investment opportunity. Trumping deregulating and lowering of taxes, no doubt that's coming, is a magnet for money, both domestic and foreign. So this is just the beginning of it. This is a very good thing. Love it. This is great news. And we'll go to some of the callers on these other topics. But you know what I really want to do for you right now is I want to refer you back to the leading story of the day, the new intolerance in America opposing a political theocracy. It's a cautionary tale, and it's on michaelsavage.com. And then I want to refer back to the folks who called, whose son was a Navy SEAL who was killed in that helicopter crash that they mentioned in the last hour, when all those Navy SEALs were killed at the same time. Mr. and Mrs. Strange called from a car after laying flowers at the grave of their son, Michael Strange, and his fellow SEALs, who were all killed that same day in that Chinook, that 47D. And I mentioned during that interchange with Mr. Strange on the phone, who still wants justice for his son and his son's hero buddies, that I had written years ago, A Time for War, Michael Savage. I found the book, and I'm going to read you the first three pages, the prologue, to show you how it affected me. Incidentally, that book was dedicated for my brother Jerome in the book. I just looked at that. It was copyrighted in 2013, A Time for War thriller, Michael Savage, first edition, prologue, Tongi Valley, Afghanistan. Chief Petty Officer James Grant sat on the rattling red canvas seat among 38 of his fellow SEALs as the CH-47D Chinook slashed across the dusty valley. He didn't really see the men sitting across from him, wasn't aware of the white sunlight coming through the big windows, washing color from the cabin, save for the bright red, white, and blue of the flag stretched across the roof 3 feet above him. Some genetic part of him was always aware of Old Glory, wherever he was, wherever it was, however small or large, whether it was a grocer's lapel pin or high on a staff. But right now, ferrying the quick reaction team to a firefight, James Grant wasn't thinking of the present. He did what he always did when the uncertainty of the war closed in, when nothing was guaranteed but the present, this moment. He went back to his one pure and perfect time, the 13th of May, 2010. Spring was new and their life together was younger still. James Grant and Jeannie Bundy stood in her parents' backyard under a sharp blue Arizona sky, two dozen friends and relatives watching them marry. It was the last thing Chief Petty Officer Grant would do before shipping off to Naval Amphibious Base, Little Creek in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Joining the SEALs was a tradition begun by his grandfather in 1963, a year after the Navy's Special Operation Force was founded. Taking a bride was part of that big holy deal, as his own father had once described it. You wed, you wore your country's uniform, and you served God by doing both. That was the proud Grand way, dating to the French and Indian War, and Major Richard Grand of the Virginia Militia. An only child of an only child, James felt a particular pride in being the standard bearer for a generation. The shrill clipping sound of the Chinook's wings edged into his mind. Chief Petty Officer Grand willfully held on to the image of Jeannie in her simple white gown, like a little ray of sun, given form and breath and a loving, trusting expression. As he spoke the vows and looked into her innocent eyes, life seemed full and complete. The future given form and clarity. The world made comprehensible. He smiled at the memory. The smile lasted as long as a heartbeat. A moment later, the Chinook made a sickening drop that kicked Grand's entire body up against the padded roof of the cabin. There were shouts, but they were just words. Power! Down! Christ! His body, along with those of the other men, didn't come down until the helicopter did, smacking the barren ground like a monstrous fly swatter, the fore and aft rotors springing earthward and then up before settling into ugly, still twisting shapes as the cabin collapsed beneath them. Sand billowed from the impact zone, followed by a fanning array of sparks. Then they were swallowed by a massive red-orange fireball that punched from the olive-green chopper to both sides of the valley before the wreckage had even settled. The flames rolled back, seeking something to burn, as black smoke churned upward, driven by the dying turns of the rotors. A grand tradition perished in an instant, along with 39 lives and countless futures. I'm reading from my novel, A Time for War, which was written as a thank you to the men who were assassinated in that so-called war incident. But there's more to the opening than just the crash. Now, the rest of that opening has to do with who did this to them. And it has to do with a Chinese operative in the hills of that valley who brought the copter down. I don't know if you remember that. Sammo Yang, the man nearest the explosion, the only man in this remote section of the valley, smiled. He was behind a large rock, dead brushwood and gnarled juniper branches piled high on either side for camouflage. The Chinese national was still crouched on the balls of his feet, ready to retreat in case the helicopter was not traveling alone. It was difficult to be sure with the deafening echo generated by the twin Chinook rotors and visibility limited by winds that whipped up swirling dust devils the size of a mango tree. These windstorms were made visible by the dead foliage and sand they swept up. The rolling heat of the explosion hit the boulder like a silent scream blazing around him. When he felt the initial punch roll past him, the man pulled a billowing sleeve over the device strapped to his forearm. He looked over the rock and did not see another helicopter. A solo flight, as most of these missions were. Tandems typically came if there was a firefight and reinforcements were required. The young man picked up the Type 56 assault rifle that had been hidden beneath the branches and slipped it over his right shoulder. Then he stepped sure-footedly along the rocky foothill away from the blast. After 4 hours since his last break, it felt good to stand and to move. The short man was dressed in his in the shalwar kameez of the region, a loose-fitting, long-sleeved black tunic over drawstring trousers. He wore a beard cut in the short style of Tangi Valley tribesmen, and his head was covered with a black-and-white checked keffiyeh. The sweltering Arab headdress was not requisite. A tapi or kufi pillbox cap would have sufficed, but he did not want anyone to see his features or skin color. Though his superiors had selected a region that was rarely traveled on the ground, there were still roving Taliban and unaffiliated bandits. If seen, he would rather not attract their attention. He had none of that. What he carried was far more valuable. The young man rounded the edge of a bare 1,000-foot outcropping that stood jagged against the bright late morning sky. A rugged slope spread before him. It was 10 kilometers to the base. That was where he would meet his ride from Pakistan, an Aerospatiale SA-330 Puma. He didn't have to check the GPS device tucked in an inside pocket. He knew from photographs the precise geological location of latitude 34 degrees, 41 minutes, 25.08 seconds, longitude 68 degrees, 23 minutes, 54.96 seconds, the outside limit of the helicopter's fuel capacity. At least the trek home was downward, though he had to cross it before sunset. Satellite reconnaissance showed that the slopes, a popular route for drug runners and Taliban fighters, were rarely traveled during the daytime when the temperature was headed to a noontime high of 120 degrees. Even scorpions and marauders waited until dusk before starting. And I'll pause right there, and I'll close with the last paragraph or two from A Time for War, where this helicopter was brought down, not shot down. He went there to look for any survivors among the SEALs. The young man moved across the rocks, their radiant heat rising up his pant legs. He left trails of sweat where he walked, but they evaporated quickly. He kept his eyes on the horizon, felt for footholds rather than look for them, since the shadows and perspiration blurred vision could be misleading. He had trained for this mission in secret, in hostile environments, so he would be ready. The first part had gone exactly as planned, but it was just the beginning of a process that would end with an enemy broken forever, and more importantly, humbled. Economies can be restored, armies repopulated, and cities rebuilt. But face a nation's honor was something not even the centuries could repair. In less than a month, there would be only one world power. That's the prologue to A Time for War, and it was written as a dedication to the Navy SEALs who were sacrificed by someone or some entities within this government, in my opinion, and the opinion of the parents of Michael Strange, the Navy SEAL who was sent to his death along with his fellow countrymen on a Chinook helicopter, much as I have just fictionalized in A Time for War.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Finish the opening chapter for A Time for War, which was dedicated to the Navy SEALs who were sent to their deaths in the Chinook helicopter. So, in this fictional version, the men were sent to their deaths by Chinese operatives who used, let us say, an EMT blast to bring the helicopter down. They took control of the helicopter's electronics, in other words, and crashed the helicopter in this fictional attack. And then I write about the cell from China of these security services operatives in America. And one of them who had failed them is taken out in a little boat to the area I know very well, outside the Golden Gate Bridge, because I'm a former boater in the area. I have a little boat now, but I don't boat out there anymore. And anyway, they're going to dispose of this guy. They're all Chinese. He's one of them. They've been together for years. But he made a mistake, and he failed them. And it's a hierarchy, and they're going to kill him. And so he gets in the little boat with them. Then they get into a berth from a closed cabin. And then they go out under the Golden Gate Bridge in this little yacht, and then they stop as they reach the Farallon Islands. The two men grabbed him by the arms and pulled him from his seat out of the cabin into the salt air. His handkerchief slipped from his eye and he saw the skyline of San Francisco in the distance. He smelled a musty scent like that of a dog come in from the rain. He heard throaty clucking sounds and the splash of breakers. The men hoisted him up and he turned, saw a raw, sharp, high outcropping of rock. There were elephant seals on the crags. He said, "Are they going to strand me here?" The movement sent a series of drill-like shocks through his head, and yelping, he clapped a hand on his jaw to hold it still. When he could focus his thoughts, he felt a sense of gratitude that they were going to give him time to make peace with his actions. The man hit the water hard on his lower back. The impact folded him at the waist, his arms and legs shooting straight up as he went under. Water flooded his mouth, nose, and ears before he could right himself. As he flipped, the pressure of the cold sea shocked his wound, causing him to scream a strange gurgling noise. His hands and knees came into contact with rough rock under the surface. He clawed at them until his face was above the surface. And then he heard the engine of the yacht still idling. And then the wave hits him. I'm not reading every word in here. And he tries to get up onto the rocks of the Farallon Islands. And something happens. As his brain was processing the pain and he realized he had to get up on the rock to keep from being buffeted again, he was dragged back into the water. The tickling sensation became a fiery ache, as though it were being yanked across a field of sharp stones. When his open eyes went under, he was disoriented. He did not see the green-gray water of moments before, but a murky red haze. It was joined by amber circles swimming around the edges of his eyes, by a flame that shot along the outside and inside of his left thigh, by a sudden intake of breath that filled his mouth with something foreign and metallic tasting that stuffed his lungs with a sense of spongy discomfort. Located 27 miles from the Golden Gate, the uninhabited Farallon Islands are a nature preserve with a large seasonal seal and sea lion population that attracts great white sharks. You can read it yourself if you can still find the book A Time for War. And you'll see what I think happened in a fictional version right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
There's a couple other headlines that caught my eye this morning. Owner of Oakland Rave Cave was a negligent father and drug addict. No. You mean all of the poor people who died were not upstanding American citizens? I'm surprised that they haven't been given the Presidential Medal of Freedom yet to the owner of the Rave Cave. The man who ran the illegal ghost ship, Artist Enclave in Oak. Artist. Everyone's an artist. I mean, I'm very sorry that they died. They're human beings. They were just out for a party. No one deserves to die like that. But I must say to you, to now glorify everyone who was at the drug-fueled sex cave, we're not great Americans. I mean, let's stop already with the worship. 36 people died in the fire Friday night. The man who ran it was a deadbeat dad who neglected his children to hold drug-fueled sex parties inside the warehouse, according to family and friends, as published in the New York Post. A pair of caregivers for Derek Ion Almina's three children told the Daily Mail that the free-spirited 46-year-old would often leave the children with them for up to 5 days at a time while he got strung out with his wife, Micah Allison, and ran off to Bali and other places for their little fun sex parties. And then she'd come back and say, "Oh, we danced under the moon. It was this transcendent experience, recalled Mariah Benavides, who was just 16 years old when she started watching Almina's three children, ages 14, 8, and 5. So they would disappear, go out on these little ventures there, dump the kids. Then he ran this thing down here. And someone says, "When would you call a crack house a crack house?" Anyway, there's 36 people dead, others injured for life, period. Now, I made a prediction on this show yesterday that the Trump team would soon start firing some of the people around him because of the intolerance that I see emerging. You're not going to believe what came out. New York Post, Michael Flynn's conspiracy-loving son kicked off Trump's transition team. I had no idea this man was even on there, but he was on there. Michael Flynn Jr., the conspiracy theory-loving son of Donald Trump's national security advisor, got bounced from the president-elect's transition team Tuesday, that's today, over his bizarre tweets about Pizzagate. Under the theory pushed by Alex Jones and other members of the so-called alt-right, Hillary Clinton and aide John Podesta are linked to a child sex ring based in a Washington, D.C. pizza restaurant. Well, they fired him. Earlier in the day, VP-elect Mike Pence said on MSNBC's Morning Joe that Flynn Jr. had no involvement in the transition whatsoever. Well, unfortunately, he was making that up, because CNN revealed Monday that the younger Flynn had an official .gov email address. So that's lie number one. And Foreign Policy magazine also reported that the younger Flynn assisted in personnel vetting, managing his father's schedule, and fielding transition-related emails for the general. On Twitter, Flynn Jr. had suggested that Pizzagate was true. I don't want to go into the Pizzagate story at all. I do want you to understand what I'm saying to you, which is that the members of the transition team who are misaligning the Trump campaign, the incoming Trump presidency, are going to be out of there soon. And they started with him, by the way. Because the conspiracy theories are not what Trump needs, number one. But the insular nature of the transition team is also the last thing that the Trump campaign and Trump presidency needs. They must not cut themselves off from constructive advice, no matter where it comes from. It's that simple. Now, many of you know about the intolerant left, but something is now emerging in the wake of a Trump victory. I see intolerance on the other side. You can't say anything against decisions Trump is making without facing some type of vitriol from the true believers. There was a book written about this type of psychological behavior with that exact title, The True Believer, Thoughts on the Nature of Mass Movements by Eric Hoffer. I remember reading it in the 50s. And it describes the fanaticism of people who are consumed by one idea without taking a step back to see what's really going on and how those dynamics feed a mass movement. That's what I'm afraid we're seeing with Trump. You see, I was the only one in the conservative libertarian sphere who objected to the dangerous act of Trump publicly taking this call from Taiwan or making the call to Taiwan before he is even president. And now we learned last night who was behind it. Bob Dole. Bob Dole, the lobbyist, now says he was instrumental in making this telephone call happen. You see, he's on the payroll of Taiwan. But Edwin Fulner, former president of the Heritage Foundation, was said to have been a crucial figure in setting up the communication channels between Trump and Taipei. These are people who served...